You don't have any questions, huh? Okay, then I can leave.
Can I ask something?
Yeah.
I think this concept of karma is a very hot and heavy. It's very very hot and heavy subject.
Yeah.
So for someone who is just getting their feet wet, how can this concept be more practical so that it can be better comprehended?
Don't do unto others what you don't want others to do unto you. That's the best way how you can handle karma. Yeah. Don't have the thoughts that you don't want others to have about you. No. Don't say words, that you don't want others to say to you. No. I mean, it's a perfect way how to handle karma. No. And don't do unto others, what you don't want others to do unto you. No. If you don't want others to be mean, don't be mean. No. If you want others, to give you a lot, then be generous. Huh? If you don't want others to give anything to you, okay, don't give. Huh? If you want to be killed, then kill. Huh? If you want to be tortured, then torture. Huh? It has nothing to do, it's bad or good, Bad or good, depends on the society we live in. Huh? It's just karma. Huh? I mean, whatever you do, it will come back to you. That's the only law.
But it will turn upside down. So if there is a sadist who enjoys hurting others, in next life, when he gets hurt, he won't enjoy it.
Because then he's a then he still is a sadist and somebody tortures him.
Yeah, but the point is that he won't like it. So he's not turning into a masochist who enjoys it.
You don't. Does he really enjoy it? That's the other question.
Of course, he runs away from suffering. But.
He does it out of his pain that is in his heart. Yeah? So. I mean, don't speculate. I mean, just look at your own life. Are you a sadist? Yeah, probably you are. Well, then you will have a lot of fun in your next life. So, you understand? I mean, that is the easiest way how to deal with karma.
I understand this, Ajahn. I think I'm just trying to figure out, maybe for people getting into in the very beginning of Buddhism.
Don't talk about that.
Yeah, how do you exercise great compassion when you also, when you see a very unfortunate person? And how do you practice compassion without thinking that why this state of being came to be the way it was, a poor, unfortunate person. How can we just practice compassion without thinking that we know that it's because of a bad karma for that person? You know what I mean? So how do we bring compassion first and judgment second, I guess? I don't know if I make any sense.
The easiest way, of course, is to stop thinking. I mean, what is the use of judging? Huh? I mean, the use of judging is making yourself look good. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, get rid of it. Don't judge. I mean, in the Bible it actually says don't judge. Because with the level with the measure you judge, that's how you will be judged. Huh? Do you want to be judged by others?
No.
So, don't judge.
So right thought would be to not think of
yeah.
an unfortunate circumstances that somebody's going through as their bad karma, yeah. and let it be what it is.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't, that would be a wrong thought to think that this person is in a state of a woeful state because of a bad karma.
I just say it for the people who are able, you know, to grasp the meaning of it. Yeah? But we never should use it to judge it, you know. Yeah? I mean, the best way is, you know, to live in this, to live your life without thinking. Just do. Just be. Yeah. But people can't do that. Yeah? We can't, you know, just sit, you know, I see people, you know. When I see them, I just see them. But you see them and you judge them. You put them into this drawer, this drawer. Yeah? They're nice, they're beautiful, they're poor, they're rich, you know, just like that. Yeah? What's the use of it?
It's not a skillful view.
That's not at all. Yeah? That's quite an unskillful view, because I mean it just all what it, you know, proves is your egoism. Yeah? Egoism. And it has no value of whatsoever. I mean, if it's a rich person, I should help him just the way if it's a poor person. And don't you think, you know, rich people don't suffer, they just mostly suffer more, you know, than others. Of their internal dukkha. I've seen very seldom, you know, rich people who are happy. But I've seen a lot of people who are poor who are really happy. So, I mean, the use of judgment is completely, for us, you know, I mean, it's useless.
Yeah, und der Chef von Playboy. Und er hat in Amerika viele Frauen um sich, hat ein großes Vermögen.
Mhm.
Und in die Kamera hat er gesagt, I'm the happiest person in the world.
Okay. I don't say that it doesn't exist, you know. But he won't be happy now the moment he comes close to death. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I have to see that person, yeah? To see if he really is happy. But it doesn't matter, you know, what people say, you know, if they're happy, you know, rejoice with them, yeah? That's what we can't do, yeah? If they're unhappy, you know, have compassion for them. Huh? No matter, you know, what status, what caste they're in, you know, what social status they have. But we cannot be compassionate, because all what we do is think about us. Isn't it? When you see a poor person, you know, you think about you. You don't think about the poor person. When you see a person suffering, you think about you. You don't think about the suffering person. Strange, huh? And you realize, you know, because you project that poorness or the suffering that this person has, and, you know, you're afraid that this will happen to you. So you're actually not concerned with this person. You're just concerned with your fear that the same thing might have happened to you.
It's greed.
Whatever you call it.
Das Beispiel haben sie in Afrika gezeigt, als manche Leute darüber gegangen sind, haben den Armen in dem Dorf geholfen, was zu geben, von dem sie gedacht hätten, sie bräuchten es. Und wenn die old ladies came and gave something to the poor people, and they saw how they suffer in easy houses, and how they stay and how they live, then they start crying. The tears run down when they see, but in fact, the kids was playing around, was happy, all around the place. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't actually suffering, but the woman still saw that and start crying about what the kids should have, might need, but in fact they were happy and satisfied with what they got.
Yeah, I mean it's wrong view. I mean, whatever people think, you know, people from America, you know, think, you know, everybody else who doesn't have a TV or has no fridge, you know, is poor. Yeah? Doesn't live in a house, you know, is poor. Yeah? And he must be suffering. Yeah? I mean, that's their view, you know, that they project on the world. Yeah? They don't understand, you know, that living in the forest, you know, can be a wonderful life. Yeah? But, yeah. It's quite harsh to say this, isn't it? That we don't have compassion, really. We try to, you know, to console people, you know, because we don't like, you know, to hear their suffering. Huh? Huh? Somebody's crying, oh, you know, heartfelt crying, you know, I mean, we try to console it. Please stop crying, you know. Because it makes us cry, we can't stay with this unpleasant feeling that another, you know, inflicts on us. So we are not concerned with that person, we are concerned with us. I mean, it's... You start seeing it? Huh? Next time, you know, you go into the decision... into this situation, you know, I mean, just look at your own heart, you know, how it feels, huh? What kind of thoughts are there when you see a person like that? Huh? The first thought is fear, you know, that the same thing happens to you. Huh? The next thing, you know, is this unpleasant feeling. I mean, how can we not feel? Huh? How can we not feel, you know, the another person suffering? Because we feel it, because we are not separate. We are not separate entities. We all have the same common base. How can we not feel if somebody is hurt, you know? That's why it's so cruel, you know? It's cruel to the other person, it's cruel to ourselves, you know, to really hurt somebody. Because we do feel the pain. If you hit somebody, if you stab somebody, you feel the same pain as that person. We live in our thoughts. Okay, you know, he's my enemy, you know, he should die, you know, all right, you know, things like that. You don't realize it. But when you do it, you know, when you do it mindfully, you couldn't do it. If you're completely aware, you couldn't do it. You would see the unpleasantness, you know, in your own heart, you know, or unwholesomeness. That's why the key, you know, why one of the keys to our practice is this awareness. That shows us what is going on in our heart. We cannot be cruel to other people because we cannot, only if we are masochists, yeah. We can be cruel to other people. We can't even be cruel to other people, but we are masochists, you know. We are cruel to other people and we feel the same cruelness to ourselves, huh? How can you do that? You really think you're another entity. You really feel that you're separate from all of the rest. And that's why you feel alone. You have separated yourself out in thought. That you're different. But the common base, you know, is all the same. How can you not feel? And if you can feel it, you know, if you, how can you not have compassion? So I mean, the path, you know, to real compassion is stop your thought and live in the reality. Come down from your ivory tower and live, you know, live at the base, you know, where things are happening, not where you think, imagine, huh?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. Yeah, I just, the reason I asked this was about this, you know, caste system and even a case of a rape. It is extremely cruel if somebody, maybe in their thought, without really knowing, maybe something they read or something like this, and they go about and they see a raped person and say, you know, because of the past karma, that is actually a wrong view.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is...
Unless that person knows everything about the karma of that person who just got raped, you know, for many, 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 many lives. Mm-hmm. But you know,
don't only say about rape, yeah? Think about all the people I killed. Think about all the people I tortured. Yugoslavia, for instance, recently, you know, Cambodia, Vietnam. I mean, they're just in the last 50 years, yeah? I mean, how cruel can be human beings towards other human beings? I mean, rape is, it's a minor offense, yeah? I mean, they are tortured, you know, they are skinned alive, you know, I mean, they're ditched into things, you know, I mean, and that not only for one short moment.
Until they die.
Sometimes until they die, huh? Chinese, you know, I mean, no matter where, you know, be it in the prison camps, you know, in Russia, down to the camps in Vietnam or Cambodia or things like that, you know, or South America. I mean, it's cruelness everywhere. Yeah? I mean, in front of our doors in Europe, you know, I mean, it was Yugoslavia. Yeah? What was it? The Serbs and the Croats. Yeah? It's there anywhere. Yeah? So when you tell, you know, to a some extent, you know, it is in Israel and Palestine. Palestine. What Palestine? Huh? What is it?
French Palestine. It's in English. Is it Palestine?
Palestine.
Ethiopia, the Einfolterzentrum in Bangladesh, this existiert immer noch.
It really does matter, you know. Huh? You can't tell these people, you know, that are tortured. You can't tell, you know, I mean, just go back, you know, to 60 years ago to the Jewish camp, you know, concentration camp. Right? You can't tell the Jewish when they come out, you know, that was their karma, you know, when they died. They will not understand. It is for you to understand about your own doing. Huh? I mean, the Dhamma teaching is for us to understand. It's not for us to teach others. I mean, that's Christianity. Teaching others what they have to do. Huh? Telling others what they have to do. You know, how to behave. Yeah? Buddhism is for teaching us, ourselves. For us to understand. We cannot use the teaching of the Lord Buddha, you know, catching the snake at the tail. Huh? To teach others or to look down on others. And that's what they do, you know, with Buddhism a lot, you know, in the Buddhist circle in the West. Huh? Look at you, you know, look at your greed, look at your hate, you know, and I mean, they always point out, you know. I mean, but Buddhism is to point towards yourself, you know. Look at my greed, you know, I mean, have you ever seen a Buddhist talking, hey, look at my greed, you know, look at my conceit, arrogance? Huh? Have you seen that? Huh? Did anybody, you know, of the Buddhists, you know, really show off, you know, with his arrogance, hate, and conceit? No? Always pointing at others. That's not Buddhism. Got the message? No. When you look at me, I mean, you can see a lot of arrogance, huh? Isn't it? Or conceit, yeah? But is it? I just know things. And people, you know, in the West who just proclaim that they know some things, we call them conceited or arrogant. I just say that I know it, you know, and I know it. I don't care what people think. That is something, you know, I mean, what you have to get rid of, you know, what other people think about. I mean, you do a lot of things, you know, because, you think you raise in the opinion of others. Or if I do this, you know, these kind of people will look good on me, yeah? Or favorable, or will love me. It's not you. I mean, why do you hide constantly half or, you know, or 60% of yourself and just display 20% of yourself? When you meet a person, I mean, you will see how you view yourself. I mean, whatever you present to that person, is that what you want others to know about you? And the rest, all the shit, you know, that is in your heart, you don't present it. You don't go up to people and say, I'm an asshole. I'm an arrogant, conceited bastard. I can say these things about me. I have no problem with that. Because I actually do know what I'm talking about. So, Buddhism is about teaching ourselves. I mean, the Lord Buddha didn't allow, you know. For instance, he didn't allow that the teaching was put into Sanskrit. That was the higher form of language, you know. Pali was the standard, you know, the every spoken language, you know, Sanskrit. He didn't allow it. He didn't want to become Buddhism to become a philosophical topic, or a religional topic, like Hinduism, you know, that was always in Sanskrit, And people didn't understand Sanskrit, you know. I mean, so I mean, they are fooled, you know. Just like in the old German, you know, I mean, they were speaking in Latin, I mean, people were fooled. The Christian priests, you know, were using Latin, you know. The normal people didn't understand what they were talking about. And he didn't allow, you know, to go out and preach. I mean, we should be, It's not that we are, We as Buddhist monks should be examples of how to live, you know, how to behave. And as an example, that's how we draw people in. Not through words. As an example. And if you find me a bad example, then just leave, you know. We have to have examples. I mean, from childhood on, we were looking for examples. We're looking for people who are outstanding. To adjust ourselves, to adjust our views, to adjust our action. I mean, at least that was for me. When I met my first teacher, you know, I was so amazed. I want to become like him. And so I did everything what he taught me. Until, you know, a few years later, you know, people called me his brother. Because we were so much alike. So I think in the last few days, I mean, I've covered all of the subjects that are important for us in Buddhism to start practicing. And didn't leave anything out. I didn't elaborate on investigating the five khandhas or the five groups, but that's okay. It's not necessary. For the moment, I mean, we really need to stay calm. So if you have any questions, then go ahead. Eh? Where are your problems? Where are your questions? Where is your doubt? What is it that you want to know? I mean, how often do you have the opportunity to ask somebody? Huh?
Not very often.
So go ahead and ask. Ask the things that burn on your heart. Huh? What is it that you want to know? Julian.
Maybe I know about responsibility to this world, yeah? To humanity.
Hmm?
To the responsibility to this world, to humanity, you know, it's, I mean, it's a completely different purpose, I guess. But it's kind of, it all seems so hopeless for this world, you know, this humanity. It's always kind of in the direction of getting out of the circles that I'm trying to, I mean, our species, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when you look at this way, at humanity, I mean, it's dire. Yeah? I mean, it's really, well, I mean, it can be really oppressive. But this oppressive thing is in your heart. So make yourself free. And then look, you know, make yourself free of your views and opinion, and then look at this. Then you will see. You will see some joy, you will see a lot of dukkha. And you will see that as long as the people do not come and visit you like you did, there's no hope of change. The people have to come from their own. You cannot tell the people how to live happily. That's typical German. They go everywhere, you know, and say, you have to do it like this and this and this and this, and that's correct. That's typical Chinese. Eh? We know how you should do things. Eh? That's not the way. You have to catch the people wherever they are. Eh? You assume, you know, I mean, from your point of view, you know, from your standard of living, you know, I mean, you were raised well in a nice family and so on, you know, and could go to university. And when you look at the rest of the world, I mean, how many have this opportunity? Huh? How many are raised in a good family? You know, how many, you know, have no concerns for, you know, for food and things, other things like that? Huh? How few are there? Huh? But you still have a lot of dukkha. You still have a lot of discontent. And the more you look on the world, I mean, the more your discontent grows. Huh? But this is your personal discontent. You want it to be otherwise. You cannot accept the way things are. And that's why you have dukkha. You cannot accept the world as it is. That's why you have dukkha. Well, first accept yourself as you are, with all your bad sides and with all your good sides. And then have another look at the world. And then you see, you know, I mean, you see it is just. Yeah? And there's nothing that you can do.
Can you really say that, Ajahn? Like, because Gandhi, for example, he liberated Martin Luther King, for example, they created a lot of, you know, this type of a movement in the United States, and Gandhi created a nonviolent. So is it, I mean, can we be a pacifist, or can we be more of a activist as well with these ideals in mind. What do you think?
Gandhi was a really great person. And he did what he had to do. But he was complete, you know, I mean, he didn't. He didn't want others to change, you know, I mean, he was the living example. And that's why he was so great. You remember the story with the mother and the child that came to Gandhi, to see Gandhi? And the mother asked Gandhi, you know, please tell the child to eat chocolate, it's not good. And then Gandhi told the mother, come back in a week. And then after a week, the mother came again with the child, you know. And then he told the child, don't eat chocolate, it's not good for you. And the mother said, why did I have to come back, you know, after 1 week, you know? I cannot tell somebody else not to do something that I do. I ate chocolate, so I had to give it up, you know, in order to tell other people not to do it. That's a great example.
So you become an activist by living the model that you want to project to the world.
Yeah, I mean, if you feel that is your driving, you know, if you feel that is your inclination, I mean, then go ahead and do it. Yeah, just don't do unwholesome things, you know. And what he did was really wholesome. Yeah? I mean, we all, you know, be it Martin Luther King, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about Martin Luther who rots in hell. I'm talking about Martin Luther King, yeah? Yeah, I mean, you know, people like that, you know, I mean, there are, yeah? But then, you know, I mean, also people look at, at my time, you know, it was Che Guevara. But, you know, that's not a good example, you know, to fight, yeah? To kill. But people look, you know, get up, stand up for your rights, yeah? Or Mao Zedong, you know, I mean, he wasn't great, but people loved him, you know, because he was different. Yeah? I mean, become an example, you know, but and then change something, but you cannot change, you know, and that is the good example of Gandhi. You cannot ask other people to change what you have not changed. Yeah? People will find it, yeah? Instantly, you know, point it out. So, and how good are we? So, see, that's why we have to work on us first. Yeah? Yeah? I mean, Lungta Mahabua became an example for all Thailand. Yeah? That's how, you know, I mean, that's how far you get, you know. It's not dependent. It always depends on the people. Yeah? If they come and see you, if they come and idolize you, you know, and if they come and follow your ways, yeah, you cannot make other people follow your ways. Yeah? You cannot teach other people how to be good, you know. But you can, you know, when they ask, when you ask me, you know, I can tell you. If you don't ask me, I don't tell you. Huh? You don't come here, you know, I don't tell you. I don't write, you know, email to Julian, please come and come, I have to tell you something. Huh? You understand the principle, it is really important, you know, in Buddhism, the principle of the people who are interested in changing themselves. The moment their interest stops, my mouth stops. Sometimes people come, you know, and ask about Buddhism and say, I don't know. Nothing is coming out. Because the people just, you know, are not really interested. Other people are really interested, you know, and then I talk. They don't even need to ask me a lot of questions. Then I talk. And talk. If their heart is interested. If their heart is not interested, I won't tell. Why should I? You know? Why should I waste my energy? So, in order to become a good example, be a good example. And that is why it's so tough. I mean, look at all the politicians, you know, who, you know. Some of them, you know, in the beginning are good politicians, you know, I mean, they really want the better of the people. Yeah? But then, they, you know, they, but in themselves they are not good. Yeah? They are, I'm telling you, they have greed and hate, you know, and then sometimes that greed becomes more and more and more and more, and then they change. The same with compassion. I mean, of course, we all have compassion. No? But as long as we, and, as we are bound by our views and opinions, our compassion cannot come through. We have only ideas, you know, what is compassionate, you know. Everybody, everybody in the world, every psychologist, you know, all the, you know, all the human, human, what is it?
Humanitarians.
Humanitarian organization tell us what is compassion, what is, you know, what is this, how we should behave. But that's not actually compassion. Compassion comes from the heart, is in the heart. It's not something that we have to learn. It's something that we have to rediscover. It's just like love, you know. Metta. Loving kindness. I mean, it's there in the heart. The moment you stop thinking, you know, and you really plunge into the heart, I mean, how can you not have it? It's there in full measures. You don't have to produce it, you know. But in the West, oh, we have to learn compassion. Yeah? I mean, it's just the idea of compassion that we have to learn. Yeah? And it's wrong compassion. Because it doesn't come from the heart, it comes all from the mind. It's rationalized compassion. Or it's rationalized loving kindness. Yeah? What is loving kindness for instance? I'll give you an example. You're the father of a child. The child plays, you know, runs after the ball, you know, and wants it, you know, and then the father comes and grabs it, you know, and says, you should not. Is that loving kindness? It could be, yeah? Because he sees the ball is running towards the street and there's a car coming, yeah? The child doesn't see it. But the child is angry. Why can't you let me do what I want? You know, that would be kindness. No? From the child point of view, I mean, you are cruel. Because you hold back the child. And that's how the view works, how the world begins. Somebody is kind to me if he lets me do what I want. If somebody holds me back, you know, he's cruel or he's mean. So I mean, is that really loving kindness? Huh? What do you think? I mean, a teacher, you know, a good teacher does the things, you know, that are good for you, right? Good for your progress. He doesn't do the things that you want. Right? Lungta was like that. He was very fierce. And he was only coming by, you know, to step on your toes.
Does it hurt?
He didn't ask that, but you know, I mean. So he showed us, you know, where we still have to work, you know. All the paths that we have not looked at. Every time, you know, he showed us another path. If he is still hung up on that path, you know, I mean, he stepped on the same toe over and over again. To show us, I mean, you haven't, yeah? You haven't even understood it or comprehended it. So, I mean, for somebody who comes from the West, you know, I mean, it's me. cool, this kind of teaching. But if you understand his teaching intentions, I mean, you're grateful. You're so grateful. How can you not be grateful if somebody shows you your bad side or the things that you're still hung up? If you have the intention, only if you have the intention of, to overcome it, of course, yeah? If you don't have the intention, if you have the intention to hide it, then of course you find it cruel. If you had no idea that it's still in you, yeah? And you want to uncover everything, then you find you are extremely grateful for this. Isn't it, Tony? Yeah?
About Siddhartha from Hermann Hesse.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this?
Oh, I mean, it has been 30, 40 years I've read it, you know. And at the time I read it, you know, I mean, I was quite, yeah, probably quite impressed. But I can't get the story anymore, so I mean, I can't judge on it. But I liked Steppenwolf, the same thing, you know.
Steppenwolf.
Kennst du nicht von Hermann Hesse? Steppenwolf? It's very famous in the US. Or used to be famous. I mean, I forget that I'm a different generation. You know Steppenwolf? So, what do you want to ask?
I think in my understanding, one of his key ideas was that in his book, he had found first followers of teachers and paths, but in the end, he walked his own path.
Yeah, that is Hermann Hesse, yeah?
Yeah.
But that wasn't Siddhartha.
No, of course it wasn't Siddhartha. I mean, Siddhartha and Buddha is also, obviously, is also happening in this book. So there is Buddha. It's just, he basically did it through, so this.
I mean,
kind of book did it through embracing.
Yeah. I mean, I can say to a certain degree I walked my own path as well. Yeah. I mean, when I was in Europe, you know, I had this teacher, you know, when I asked him a question and I thought he didn't know the answer, then I left him, you know, find another teacher. And then asked him the question, and then after a while I found out he didn't know the answer to that. They gave me an answer, but, you know, my heart told me that wasn't the answer. So I had to find myself another teacher. When I told both my teachers that I come here to Thailand, you know, to study, to come to Bandar to study, oh, don't do that, that is, you know, it's just, you know. And then I came here, and the moment I saw my teacher, I saw that he's my father, mother, and everything. He's my whole life. I just knew from the heart, I didn't even need to talk to him again. In the end, you have to have a teacher, you know. I mean, it can be a teacher in your heart. That comes from old, you know, from old experience, you know. If you studied with the Lord Buddha but didn't make it at that time, you know, I mean, the Lord Buddha can be still the teacher in your heart, yeah. But that holds only true, you know, for not maybe even 1% of the students of Buddhism. Most of them need a teacher on a daily basis. Some of the students, you know, need a teacher, you know, once in a while. A month, 2 months, 3 months, they need a teaching, you know, to get back on the right path. But most of the students need a daily, teacher on a daily basis to get them back on track, because, you know, you get so easily sidetracked. If you have the feeling that you know your way, you know, I mean, then go. I can't convince you anyway. And I have no interest to convince you.
No, that wasn't the question.
No, I mean, I know. But, you know, the general question. But that's what I'm talking. That's what people from the West normally do. Yeah. The Lord Buddha himself, you know, made some statement. Huh? I mean, in Thailand, you know, if it is a good teacher, I mean, if you don't follow, you know, his teaching, I mean, he will kick you out. But the Lord Buddha, you know, said something about that 2,500 years ago. If you have a good teacher, you learn a lot from him, and he kicks you out, crawl back to him. But when we come from the West, if somebody kicks us out, you know, our pride is hurt, you know, and then we never see him again.
There are, Ajahn, independent people who go out in the forest completely on their own without ever heard of a Dhamma, and then they just discover something similar, right? They call themselves Pacheka Buddhas or something like this, right?
Yeah, but that, not at that time.
They don't teach. Not at this time?
Not at this time. I mean, it's not the time for a Pacheka Buddha. A Pacheka Buddha is like a Buddha. The Buddhist teaching does not exist anymore. The path to deliverance is completely obstructed. That's the time of a Pacheka Buddha. He goes in the forest, you know, finds enlightenment just like the Lord Buddha. No, I mean, at this time, where the teaching is still alive, yeah? Alive means, you know, the teaching is not only in books, the teaching is not only taught, but alive means that there are the four fruits still possible. Fruit of stream entry, people like that are there, of people, you know, once returner, or anagamis, or arahants. Yeah? That means Buddhism is still alive. You can still make it in this time, day and time. Yeah? I mean, in 100 years, you know, that Buddhism will not be alive anymore. Yeah? Nobody will find the way anymore. They all, you know, cling to the teaching, and will adhere to the teaching, and, you know, over the time it will get lost. And then, you know, after it gets lost, you know, a Buddha or Pacheka Buddha can come. They could come actually at the same time, yeah? At the same time, but normally not. Yeah? I mean, to become a Pacheka Buddha, I mean, you have to go through the same kind of suffering as a Buddha. I mean, if you read the life stories of the Lord Buddha, just the last life stories, you know, where he perfected the 10 perfection, yeah, of generosity, you know, of whatever it is, yeah, you don't want to live these kind of lives. May you give everything away that is left to you, yeah? And even when you give it away, you're treated really badly. Gives away his kingdom, you know, and then goes in the forest. He gives away his wife, you know, and beloved children to a mean man, you know. I mean, all these things of, you know, I mean, you have to go through all this kind of dukkha in order to become a Pacheka Buddha or Buddha. He was feeding, you know, I mean, there was a tiger who had some tiger babies, you know, and the mother, you know, couldn't feed the tiger babies. So, I mean, he fed himself to the tiger out of compassion. And only then can you become a Buddha that discovers the teaching, you know, and teaches. So, I mean, don't even...
But did he know in that time?
It's even difficult, you know, to become an arahant, you know. You have to go through so many... You have to go, you know, at least through 50% of the same painful stories, you know, like the Buddha.
But did he know that the body is not himself?
I mean, he heard the teachings from various Buddhas, so I mean, within his heart, you know, I mean, he knew it. Yeah? But I don't know. I mean, you ask me a question about the Lord Buddha. I'm not the Lord Buddha. But what he thought at the moment, I don't know. I just know the stories, you know, and they're, you know, the... runs a shower through my spine, you know, when I think about that, yeah? Cutting himself, you know, and feeding himself to the tiger, you know.
Aber Sie wissen, was wahrscheinlich ist, als, ob er es als Überzeugung gemacht hat oder ob er es gewusst hat.
Why do you want to know that? Yeah? I mean, is it of any importance? You know, get rid of your body, investigate your body and then and see that the body is not self. Yeah? It's not important. Yeah? Questions, how do I get into samadhi? It's a more valid question.
Can I ask you an unimportant question? Maybe it's unimportant, but just something that is kind of prevalent in the world today. In Buddhism, we have the Theravada practice, which is only found in, I guess, Sri Lanka, Burma, Thailand, probably these three countries, maybe Laos.
Laos.
We also have the Mahayana tradition, we have the Vajrayana, the Tibetan tradition. How did you find this? I mean, did you analyze all of these? Because they also claim themselves as Buddhism, and you also had this big belly Buddha, the Amitabha in China, right? And the Zen and all of these things. Mm. And Nichiren, I think, is another one that's called in Vietnam, right? Mm. So how come within Buddhism you have so much of these schisms, let's just say, and how do you assess them? You know?
You assess them with your heart. Whatever you're drawn into.
Is the teaching the same, the core teaching,
no.
You know, the Eightfold Path, Four Noble Truths, this type of thing? That's what I...
It's very difficult for me to judge on this basis. I would say, you know, the Four Noble Truths are probably there in all of it, in all of Buddhism. But about the path that leads, you know, I mean, there are, about the fourth noble truth, there are lots of variations. So, the only judgment I can do is, you know, people, you know, from the Zen tradition or from the Mahayana tradition, come here. And normally when they hear certain things, you know, just like body investigation. What's that? Why do we have to do that?
It's so amazing. Because Mahayana means a great vehicle. That's
yeah.
What the word means. So
yeah, but you know, they pull themselves apart, you know, from the strict, and from the strict Vinaya. I mean, as monks, you know, I can only talk about the monks. Nobody else, you know, then the Theravada Buddhist tried to follow the Vinaya that was laid down 2,500 years ago. Zen Buddhists work, you know, Zen monks work, cook, things like that. We are not allowed to do that. Others, you know, and handle money. We are not allowed to do that because it's all in the Vinaya. So the Vinaya, in terms of monkhood, then it's really true. I mean, Theravada is the only tradition that follows the original teaching of the Lord Buddha for monks. None of the other Buddhists, you know, I mean, when you go to Japan, you know, I mean, some of these Buddhists are married monks. Yeah. I mean, why? And cooking, harvesting, things like that, you know, I mean, to dig up the earth, you know, it is not allowed for us as monks, eh? Because we will harm other beings. Eh? So we should live a life completely without harming anything, to make us pure. Eh? So I mean, whenever, you know, these these monks think, you know, I mean, let them think, you know, let them be happy. People come to me, oh, I'm enlightened. Oh, may you be happy with your enlightenment. There's nothing to discuss for me about it. People's belief is so utterly strong. Yeah? Belief can, you know, can turn mountains into water. Yeah? So let them believe if they want to. If they're happy, you know, if they're happy that they believe they are happy, you know, let them be happy. Yeah? Why should I doubt that, you know? I mean,
yeah? Maybe they want to get out of the delusion.
Well, I mean, then they would come and seek something. Yeah? The moment they seek something else, that means they have dukkha. Yeah? If they don't seek something, you know, they don't have dukkha. Or they didn't see the dukkha. Okay? So, find... how is your practice going? Can you get the mind calm? No, difficult. Yeah? Stick, you know, really stick to the Buddha. Yeah? Or stick to the breath, you know, whatever you take, or both of them. You know, it's easier maybe in the beginning to use both with breathing in and door with breathing out. Combine these. Yeah? Just stick your attention to it. Yeah? I mean, you want at least to experience some sort of calmness that gives you an idea, you know, what it's all about. Huh? If you don't get the idea, if you just, you know, just try to, you know, to get as much information as possible, I mean, then it's better for you to read some articles. Here you have the opportunity to practice something, to make an experience. Huh? So make the most out of it. Huh? Try as much as you can. Huh? And don't try to distract yourself too much. Don't think about, you know, these concepts. Huh? I mean, these are, you can call them concepts, you know. I mean, the Four Noble Truths are concepts, you know. The Five Khandhas are concepts, and each another are concepts. But there are concepts, you know, to help us to understand, you know, how we progress on the path of practice. And everything else that is not necessary, I mean, is left out. Yeah? And you remember probably, you know, that when when the monks asked him or the lay people asked him how much Lord Buddha knows, he picked up a handful of leaves, you know, that's what I, you know, yeah? That's what I teach you. Yeah? The rest, you know, of the leaves, you know, that's what I know. But only this is important. I mean, what's the use of talking about knowledges that he has, you know, from 24 Buddhas ago, you know? What kind of, you know, I mean, the last Buddha, before our Buddha, you know, was also on this earth. Where has the civilization disappeared into, you know? I mean, it's an interesting question, isn't it? And there were three Buddhas before him on this planet. And on other planets were other Buddhas, you know, and he could remember up to 24 Buddhas. So, I mean, on other planets, normally on a planet there are 4 or 5 Buddhas, lifespan. No? So where all these civilizations, you know, with the Buddha have disappeared, just like he said, you know, it will completely disappear. And nobody will know about this civilization anymore. And a new civilization will be created, and then the last Buddha comes for this planet. Nobody will know about, you know, whatever. I mean, all the cities are gone, all, you know, everything is gone. Disappeared. Vanished into dust. And then a new Buddha comes, a new civilization. And we think we are the cream of the hype, yeah, or whatever, yeah. Compared to the last civilization, we are barbarians.
On this planet.
Huh?
On this planet.
Yeah, on this planet.
And where is the evidence of that? It's like, I know there's like the pyramids and all these things about 10,000 years ago.
Yeah. Look a little bit deeper into Atlantis, yeah. I mean, that everything was powered by the mind. They didn't need, you know, these. But they had airplanes and they had, you know, they had boats and things like that. I mean, some of it is recited in Plato, you know, I mean, about the lost continents. Yeah? Yeah. But it was so long ago, you know, I mean, it's 30, 40,000 years ago, nobody knows about it. All what we know about our civilization is maybe 2,000 years. We know that, you know, Egypt, you know, but we know very little about Egypt. Yeah? 7,000 years ago, what happened 10,000 years? And then there's a gap of nearly 20,000 years. What happened in these 20,000 years?
Yeah? Even the big battle of India, the Mahabharata, yeah? Ramayana, it seems like, because when people read it on the Vedas, it's a very complex war,
yeah?
But there's no evidence of any of that in India.
No. I mean, there's hardly any evidence of Buddhism, of the flourishing of Buddhism in India, because, I mean, the Muslims completely got rid of it. They destroyed all the monasteries, they destroyed all the scripts in the 11th century. Yeah? They completely erased that. And even the war, you know, in Sri Lanka, yeah? They had the scriptures. I mean, somebody saved the scriptures, you know, to Sri Lanka. Yeah? They had the scriptures. Then there was a war in Sri Lanka, and all the scriptures were destroyed. So they had to get them, you know, the original scriptures from Thailand. Because Thailand kept them. Thailand is a Buddhist country for 2,000 years, nearly 2,000 years now. So, I mean, they kept the scriptures. So, I mean, the Sri Lankans took it back, you know, from Thailand. So the original scripture is actually in Thai. Yeah? It's all, you know, I mean, just think about it. Yeah? The Holy Roman Empire, you know, the Roman Empire, or the Egyptian Empire, or the Persian Empire. And when you go now to Turkey, where do you see this vast empire?
You see some kind of darkish people with blue eyes in somewhere in the Kazakhstan.
Oh.
I guess a reminder of the Greek invasion in that area. But.
I mean, it's all, you know. I mean, so how can we say, you know, how can we say that there has not been a civilization? I mean, there used to be a psychic, you know, he said you could see two civilizations. One civilization before us was Atlantis, and the other was in the Pacific Ocean. But that is so long time ago, you know, that there hasn't been anything. I mean, you couldn't see anything like that.
But the Lemurians.
Huh? Lemuria.
Yeah, that. Okay, I read about this.
Mm. But the first civilization, nobody knows about it. So it's amazing, you know, I mean, we think, you know, we are the cream of the top, you know. But compared, you know, to other civilizations, we are not there. I mean, we are just wasting all the resources on this planet, you know. The next civilization has to think of something else and how to... What are they going to use? You know, it would be interesting. You know, you probably will be reborn in the civilization. So, I mean, we will see.
So, this one is the third?
Huh? This one is the fourth.
Fourth.
Yeah.
The third was Atlantis.
The third was probably Atlantis. You know, that is my guess. And the second one was Lemuria. And then the fourth, we don't know. And... The face of the planet has changed, you know, quite a lot. I mean, think about Lemuria. It was this big, you know, where there is now the fire ring. Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be a huge continent there. In Atlantis, there used to be a huge continent there.
So fought a war.
What is this? It all broke down. Because we destroy ourselves in the end. Yeah, it's every civilization. Yeah. Because of greed and hate. And you see, greed and hate comes more and more and gets more and more and stronger. What was it? When the last Russians came, they said, they're afraid, you know, that Russia turns back, you know, into... And it looks like, you know, I mean, that... what is it, Putin or whatever it is, you know? He tries to be something like Stalin again, yeah? So it goes back, you know, I mean, people, you know, go forward and then they go back, and they go forward and then they go back, go in circles. So think about yourself, don't think about other people, you know, I mean, get rid of your own greed and hate, you know, before you ask other people to get rid of that. That would be a true warrior. And you make yourself happy and you make other people happy. I mean, how can your environment not benefit from you turning to better? I mean, I always, you know, say, you know, I mean, it has, of course, you know, for Falun Gong Mahabo, it was a big radius, you know, I mean, the people, all people, you know, benefited from his benevolence, you know, or loving kindness or compassion. But even, you know, if you go to a restaurant or to go to a bar, you know, and you sit, you know, there are only two tables that are free. At one table, there sits a person, you know, who's completely, you know, happy, you know. And the other person, you see a person who is, you know, fiery with anger. Yeah? Which table would you choose? Huh? Automatically, yeah? You would choose the table, you know, with a nice person or a nice personality, yeah, to sit there. You didn't want, you know, to pour every, you know, this person to pour all their anger on you, because it's unpleasant. So if you make yourself a nice people, that attracts other people. You don't have to do anything, I mean, you just sit there, you know, and it attracts people.
This temple is an example.
Huh?
This temple is an example.
Sometimes people come here and they don't know why they came here. You ask them, I don't know.
I followed my friend.
Some people I followed my angel, other people say I followed my friend, you know, or I heard this was a nice place, you know, things like that. Okay, so go, you know, get. I can't say get your money worth. because you don't pay for it. That's sometimes a problem, you know. I think if we would advertise, you know, a course in here, you know, for 2 weeks, you know, very intensive course, for €1,000, probably would be overloaded.
Then you'd be Theravada anymore. Be Mahayana.
Even Theravada do that.
Yeah?
But not temples. I mean meditation centers.
You could ask everybody to put €1,000 £500 in the box.
You think too much, you know? I mean, this. Huh? Where are all these ideas coming from? Yeah? What is it, you know, that you want to say? Yeah? Where is it coming from?
Red Bull.
It's not certainly not from Buddha. Yeah?